All right, Ryan Burrow, thank you very much. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we are back on track for 2017. Thanks very much for filling in for me. I know Suzanne Muchin will be here a little bit later, John Hansen as well, a lot of people over the past 10 days or so while I was away, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate the fact that you are listening and that the regulars like John Najarian were on the program as well. John from CNBC is with us on a phone line. John, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Great to be with you to kick off 2017. Thank you, Stephen.
So, you know, Fox just announced that Megyn Kelly is leaving Fox News for NBC. There are the letters NBC and CNBC. So I just wonder if you're going to be sharing a studio anytime soon.
Well, that would be lovely. I've respected her and enjoyed her work for many years. And now she's going to have three jobs over at NBC, it seems. God bless her.
You know, I didn't
read enthused when I see somebody get a great contract like that.
I didn't read anything more than the first sentence. What is she going to be doing?
She's going to have a Sunday evening show. Now, it didn't say that it'll be direct competition with 60 Minutes, but most of us would sort of read between the lines and figure if you're going to be Sunday evening, you're probably not going against Sunday football,
right.
Especially on the network that carries it. So that would be interesting with Ms. Kelly. She'll be a political analyst with them as well, and she's going to be daytime. She's going to have her own show. So, wow, this is a lot of responsibilities and I'm sure an awful lot of money. It's great to have her part of the family, though.
I think it sounds as if she's a great part of any family she belongs to. So good for her and good for you guys. I am fascinated by the president-elect's ability to get businesses to react. Now, I don't know if it's always, you know, if his characterization of them is always completely accurate, like when it comes to Sprint or whatever. He was bullying Ford in many ways for planning to build this big factory in Mexico. They announced today now they won't be building that factory. In fact, we'll invest $700 million in, I think, a Michigan factory. The cars they were going to build there, they're going to still build in Mexico. But at least it's this sort of shift in investment. That comes after he was tough on General Motors. The president-elect was on Twitter earlier today. I don't know. What do you make of all of that?
Well, he is using the bully pulpit, and his is more powerful than any in history because it is Twitter.
Yeah.
So he can go directly to us, Stephen, rather than having to go through the press and have an interpretation made of his words. He is going directly, and as you say, he did go after the likes of Lockheed Martin, Boeing, now Ford, of course, is getting the benefit because while they got his ire earlier, now it's General Motors that's getting that with what's going on with their Cruise plant down in Mexico. But it's a very interesting way that he's using that, like I say, the authority and or the bully pulpit. So we'll see, at least so far, certainly Mr. Fields, we just had him, the CEO of Ford, on our show. And he was not saying that they acquiesced, but saying, look, this is a good business decision for Ford. He said the benefits to corporations in the United States of the lower taxes and so forth is a much bigger positive than anything that could be coming in the way of tariffs or anything else from cars that we would import from Mexico. So he said we made a business decision.
And so this
we're going to spend $700 million in Michigan.
But clearly the implication was it was made because of the president-elect's pressure.
Clearly, yes. I mean, you know, you could dance around that if you're Mr. Fields all you want, but it was pretty clear that, yes, this was the pressure brought to bear by Donald Trump.
All right, so your guy watches business, you watch Wall Street, and we all want jobs to stay in the U.S., but I would imagine you want business to be able to operate in a sort of unfettered way that will be good for its profits. Do we get to a point where this isn't a good thing for us?
Well, you certainly could. That is the concern that many people have. On the other hand, like I say, this was a decision not just made in the spur of a moment by Mr. Fields, but with discussions, this is by his words, discussions with the board that they sat and laid out the best case and worst case scenarios as far as if they're importing cars back into the United States for sale. A small number of those, apparently, with both Ford and General Motors, are coming back up north. Most of the cars they make in Mexico are for sale to that area or further south. And so they made the business decision saying, we are much better off with the taxes and the benefits that would accrue to us on that lower corporate tax than we are spending the money on a plant in Mexico that we're just going to expand and then have to pay a tariff on bringing the cars back. So they made that business decision.
Let's do one more political question, and I'm not sure how directly related it is, but you know, House Republicans sort of had a head scratcher yesterday when they voted to gut the House Ethics Office. And now today, after a couple of tweets from the president-elect, it looks as if the House Republicans have caved on that. Now, I know Speaker Ryan and others in the leadership didn't like the idea either, but sitting and watching Wall Street through that sort of lens, how do you view that situation with the House Republicans?
Well, I thought whatever was the reason that they pulled back, and I think you accurately described it just now, I think it was a good idea to reverse course on that gutting of the ethics department that basically, I guess, both enough of the Democrats must have supported that measure in their, you know, midnight oil meeting that they had last night, and the emergency meeting that was subsequent to that today, where Mr. Trump said, is this really the first thing that we want to do with this new Congress? Is this gut the ethics committee? He said, I want to gut health care and change that. I don't want to do this. And he really called them out, and apparently they're going to bend to his will as well.
I know there are a lot of things that are unpopular with that office and ways to fix it, but wow, not a great way to start, in my view anyway. All right, so what's going on with oil today?
Well, no one really knows. I do know that it flipped 5%. It was up 2.5%, and then it reversed and went down 2.5%. I'm not surprised, quite frankly, Stephen, because we're still going to wait and see exactly how many members of OPEC are going to do what they say they're going to do, as well as places like Libya coming back online with more production. So I think overall 55, which is 56 almost, I guess we were at this morning, did seem a little like we were getting ahead of ourselves. I would say that the price of crude oil should be more in a band of somewhere 48 to about 54. If we get back up to 60, it's certainly not the end of the world, but I just think so much volume will come on from shale producers in the United States at that level that they'll drive it right back down into the low 50s.
We're talking to John Najarian. You can see him on CNBC or at Najarian Family Offices. He's on Twitter at John Najarian. You can keep the H, no H in John. All right, I'm going to test you here because you know everything.
Okay.
What do you know about...
I wish.
This would be a good one. What do you know about China and salt?
Wow, great. Nothing is my answer. So okay, there's my proof that I don't know everything.
Well, I just saw this story and I don't know what to make of it. China has started an overhaul of its salt industry, easing a monopoly that has existed in some form for more than 2,000 years and predates the Great Wall. I guess it's seen as a further move toward a market economy in China, but that's not one you're up to speed on.
Nope, didn't see anything about it, although I do love sel, as they, I think, pronounce it in France. And I love those big flakes rather than the iodized stuff that we have here.
Well, I'm going to put one in the win column for me today, then.
There you go.
Do you have a tip
Good
for
work,
us?
Good work, Stephen.
Yeah, right. That's,
sure.
That's my goal.
Freeport-McMoRan. This is a company involved in mining, of all things gold, as well as things that you need for various products like coal and steel. They also have natural gas exposure. We saw strong activity in this one today, and it's going to be a relatively short-term move if the players are correct. They were buying an awful lot of upside calls, so we bought that for customers today.
John Najarian, great to talk to you. We'll do it again next Tuesday afternoon.
Thank you, Stephen. Great to have you back.
Bye-bye. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 1222. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Suzanne Mushin will be here a little bit later. We're going to talk about women to watch in 2017 in the world of business. And then maybe a few sort of, I don't want to say predictions, but ideas of what might be ahead for social media in the coming year as well. Andrew Herman is in the studio from DNA Info in Chicago, and we were just reliving how we spent the holidays watching MLB Network together, sort of. I saw this funky thing on it, and I tweeted it out, and then the first guy to retweet it was Andrew saying he had been watching too.
Yeah.
We really lead an exciting life.
That was strange.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's sort of sports here. I want to talk about this story, this kid, Stephen Devereaux.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Devereaux, I think?
Yeah.
Probably. Tried out for the basketball team at Whitney Young. I should say Andrew comes by to talk about businesses opening and closing and things like that in Chicago. So he tries out for the basketball team at Whitney Young, doesn't make it, instead becomes a manager for the girls' team.
Yeah.
And it opens him up to this whole new career.
Yeah, he's 24 now, but when, as you say, when he was a teen, he was at Whitney Young, and he wanted to be on the boys' basketball team, and he didn't make it. And so he became, I guess you could say, the manager of the girls' team.
Which is a very big team.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Very successful team, and you know, very, very popular in its own right. And he gets to know the coach pretty well, and then, you know, he graduates, he goes off to Baylor, and he gets interested in fashion. And now he's 24, he's out of Baylor, he's created a company called Campus Love, and one of his first clients is his old high school team.
Nice.
He has designed the new uniforms for the Whitney Young Dolphins girls basketball team, and he's trying to grow a business, and this is sort of the area that he's looking towards and for, and he's also signed on De La Salle Institute, Robert Morris, not complete uniforms for the second two, but socks and jackets and hats. And so we love to talk about this on the air, these young guys with amazing amounts of guts who go out there and try to make it in the world.
It's a different view of a similar story. I'm thinking of the guy, the kid on the north side who opened up the shoe shop to sort of reconfigure Nikes and things like that.
Yeah, and that was in Lincoln Square, I think. But so he's making these things. Not only is he, you know, he lives in South Shore. Not only has he got a great business trying to launch it here, he's making a lot of it in Roseland. So he's got like a little manufacturing facility.
He's a young guy, but he's very aware of the neighborhood, right? And
yeah,
of what's the situation facing parts of city and what he can do to help it.
Right, right. I mean, there are a lot of people who need work there, and that's who he uses. I think he does primarily it himself, but he enlists other people to help him out, and that is called Campus Love, and hopefully that is going to be a company that we're all familiar with.
I've already sent it to a couple of friends of mine I know who coach high school basketball. Wouldn't it be cool if other schools? Now, so here's my old man sort of reaction to this.
Yeah.
What? You design socks for your basketball team? And I mean this sort of seriously because, you know, there was a time when you had a uniform that you handed down from year to year, and that was the only expense. And we talk about how the middle class income isn't increasing. I think we've created so many extra expenses for ourselves, too. Okay, does that make me sound?
Well, you know, you have your socks with your team logo on it. You just frighten the heck out of the opponents.
Right.
This is all psychological warfare going
but
on.
But that
here,
is
Steve.
The sort of thing where we're buying and spending on more and more things that we didn't use to.
Oh, Grandpa, give me a break.
Really? I'm not going to get any love for you at
socks.
All.
Socks.
You think every team should have their own socks?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Fine. Let's move on then. Tell me about this second story in Albany Park.
Yeah, so this is at Lawrence in Sacramento, 3001.
Not even, I thought you'd come along with me a little bit on that. No.
I'm the father of an athlete.
Oh, that's right.
So,
okay.
So, you know, if she wants to wear socks with special stuff on them, I'm all for it.
Because okay.
I live through her, obviously, and that's what I want. Anyway, so back to Albany Park, Lawrence in Sacramento, 3001 West Lawrence was a very troubled corner for a long time. Lots of gang activity. It's Alderman Deb Mell's ward, and she sent somebody over there a couple years ago, and they found the place. The doors were open, the locks were broken, the windows were busted, and it was just a problematic place. And you know, we often think about aldermen, we think of them in two ways, right? Either getting indicted,
right,
or saying something stupid on the floor of the city council.
Right, right.
But they actually do work.
There's a story about her when she goes with the new owners of this building, their first meeting at the building, she's picking up shell casings from outside the front door.
Right. So she's trying to get somebody to buy this building so they can turn it around. So she interests this guy, the Silver Property Group, to come by. They ended up buying it. And even after they bought it, there was a little bit of trouble. They had a hard time evicting people. But now they have a coffee shop in there. Brew Coffee Works is open there. And the latest tenant is Second Story.
What is Second Story?
It is a live lit group, which is kind of a theater group.
Okay.
It's sort of storytelling thing without the radio.
Okay.
It's a theater group that has its headquarters one place, but it performs all over the city. Okay, so the headquarters is now going to be at on this spot at Lawrence. They offer educational programming and rehearsals and workshops and that kind of thing. And so this is how one block is
building by building,
changed.
Right?
Yeah.
Because I think the piece I was reading that they said the block overall was, you know, a pretty good block, mm-hmm. but it had this one building. And so here's a positive force, an alderman working with a developer. And now you can have a coffee and listen to some
live lit.
Wrapped lit.
Yeah. That's right.
Andrew
that's
Herman. Right. You can read more at dnainfochicago.com.
Right.
All right. See you again soon.
Okay.
And bring me some socks.
All righty.
Biz Lunch on 720 WGN. Susan, 1236. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, where there's the music. That means that Suzanne Muchen is in the studio.
Welcome. In my proper seat.
I was going to welcome you back to the Business Lunch, but you've been here more than me.
I was here more than you, but you were truly I'm being serious.
Right.
Some of the guests that come on, I could feel the sadness in their voice when they heard it was me. When they made the call, and they were like, we're here to talk with Steve. Who are you?
On Tuesday, did you interview yourself, or how did that go?
No, you know, I thought about that. Right. I would play you right. And then switch over to me. But in the end, I would always be right.
That's the counter to it.
That's not
like,
how you would
that's like
that?
The La La Land reality. We're just talking about the movies.
The redo.
All right. So, you know, one thing that's kind of just broken in the past, and Ryan just read the Facebook message from Megyn Kelly. We've talked a lot about her, and it seems to me that she is kind of a unique force. I mean, they come up from time to time, but right now it seems like the cheese sort of stands alone with her as a heavy-hitting free agent media
personality. I was just going to use that term. I was going to say she's one of the few free agents we saw this year because she really swung from fence to fence
right.
in a way that was actually crazily credible, right? When she did the interview, for example, with Newt Gingrich and really brought him down, and yet you also knew she's a conservative. I thought she's been, and then the whole Roger Ailes thing, she has been a real free agent, and I'm happy for her.
Yeah, and so she goes to NBC, and John Najarian, who was on with us in the first half hour, works at CNBC.
Uh-huh.
I haven't read a lot of the reporting, so I don't know what's out there and what's not, but apparently she's going to have a Sunday evening show and then a daytime show.
Okay.
And then he said it's like three different gigs. So
I mean, I wonder how much of this move is a sort of, you know, I don't know how to say it on the air, but
I don't like the way you're headed right,
right
there. Yeah,
but to Fox, and how much of it is actually this is what she wants to do with her career? A little of both, maybe.
Maybe, and you know, Fox is undergoing great changes
I know.
As well. But is there someone else like her right now out there? I mean,
not who's a real independent who's trying to actually make her way, and also let's
who would help anyone she goes to?
Yeah,
really.
I don't know.
So Megyn Kelly to Fox. It's a big day in. Politics and women.
Yeah.
Illinois has its second female senator, Tammy Duckworth,
right.
took the oath. And that's one of the things we wanted to talk about. You gave me an article that said that women had a good 2016 when it comes to politics. I don't know if I'm going to go that far.
Well, look, first of all, it's all relative because we had a year in which women really took a hit in lots of ways, at least publicly. And I'm not just talking about Hillary.
No, you're right.
The whole, you know, conversation around women really took a nosedive. But we have to celebrate a couple of wins. So, yeah, Tammy Duckworth, she's the first Thai American woman. Okay, that's a thing.
Okay, that's a little specific.
That's a specific thing.
Right.
And she's a senator, which is awesome. You also have Attorney General Kamala Harris in California, first Attorney General. And then in Nevada, there's Catherine Cortez Masto, who is the first ever Latina senator. And we also can't start the year without saying that. Let's also remember Hillary Clinton got a darn good number of popular votes.
Right. And who knew that her high watermark was going to be when she became the first woman ever
exactly.
to be nominated? I mean,
and more votes than any man has ever received.
Well, let's say any person.
Any human being has ever received.
Any breather.
Anyone who walks the face of the earth in America.
Yeah. And so would you say it's a plus year for women in politics?
I would say that relative to everyone's expectations of this just being a complete shutdown for women, we're seeing some signs of life.
Okay, so there's
not much more than that.
A little silver lining in what might have been.
A little.
Again, I think it does go beyond the Hillary Clinton losing. Like, she was not the candidate for all of womanhood.
She was not, and we learned that.
But when it comes to the sexual assault sort of stuff on both sides and all of that, it was a very negative year.
It was, and you know, Michelle Obama came out a huge winner. Huge winner. People loved what she had to say. Her, you know, popularity is at an all-time high.
Yeah.
When they go low, she goes high.
She goes high. I know. Yep. That was a great line. I don't quite understand why she's so popular.
Really?
I mean, I like her and all.
I'll tell you why. I think she has exposed herself in ways that people can relate to. You know, she's done the carpool karaoke. She's danced with Jimmy Kimmel. Okay. Like, she's talked about being a mom. She's relatable.
Okay. Speaking of relatable, let's talk about Ronda Rousey.
Is the craziest transition I've ever heard.
I don't get this at all, not even a little bit. When I started seeing more about her than I ever wanted to,
right,
two or three years
it's
ago,
a lot.
Like, who is this? What does she do? And I don't care.
Yeah.
And she's trying to sell me stuff on these commercials. I don't get any of it.
She has become this huge celebrity. And also, we should talk about, so she fights for what's called the UFC, which is the Ultimate Fighting Championship, which is basically just
two women. It shouldn't be.
Two women getting into a ring, Steve, and just beating the crap out of each
right,
other.
Right.
I mean, honestly, it's a crazy sport. Crazy. And she trains for a year.
If you could
year.
Outlaw that sport, would you outlaw that sport?
For sure.
Yeah.
It's basically
men too.
Fist fighting for money.
Yeah. And so she was the queen of all whatever she does.
Yeah.
And then she gets beaten up, right, about a year ago or so? Or
yes, and this was supposed to be her big comeback.
And this was a big thing. I mean, right there was, I mean, talk about her mental health, because she was so on top of the world, and this was her big comeback, and, well, it didn't end well.
Ronda is in big trouble, Mike. Nunes's hands are down, and she's walking Ronda down. She tags her again.
Over and over, Amanda Nunes, big combination.
That's in. It's in. It's over.
And boom goes the dynamite.
I mean, honestly, did you? And if you watch it.
Don't say that I see it coming. Don't say that to
me.
But
look, if you watched it, she was just getting pummeled. I mean, I don't know if there's a better visual.
Okay, so why are we talking about this in this segment?
Because, look, Ronda Rousey has become, whether you like her, respect her or not, a force in the universe. I mean, people follow what she does. She's a, quote, role model
for
young girls. She's gotten parts in movies. She made $3 million for that 48-second fight. She's a physical specimen. I think she was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. She's been a woman of the moment, you know, strong yet pretty, a fighter, somebody who comes back from being down. So she represents a lot, but I mean, I'd rather have a different kind of role model.
Yeah, well, it's just a fascinating sport to me that it's celebrated.
UFC.
I mean, men and women, I just don't get it at all.
And you could see the referee also really want to stop it. I mean, there was a point at which you're just watching two women almost kill each other.
Right, and just the excitement with the announcers, like, you know, so Ronda Rousey's there. There was another piece that you'd brought in, too, about the future of women in business.
Yeah, we'll just go quickly through a couple of names that I think are fantastic. I like this list from Inc. in part because it was a different group of women. It wasn't the typical Sheryl Sandbergs of the world who we hear about, Marissa Mayers. This was a group of women, very diverse, who were spotted for being really out of the box. So just two that I love. I liked Melissa McGee Proctor, who was on the list, CMO of the Atlanta Hawks. So she's, you know, working for an NBA team. She's, you know, considers herself Caribbean, Black American, and she's also the CMO for Phillips Arena. So I like a sort of woman in a man's world stepping forward. It's great. And I also really like this Kristen Green, who made the list, because she is one of the few women venture investors who really made a lot of money last year.
Is she the one who said that her strongest traits were feminine and she was afraid to sort of champion them for a while?
Right. So she considers her soft skills those that really make her successful. And Dollar Shave Club, are you a member, Steve?
I am a member.
No, you're not.
I totally am a member.
Are you serious?
I'm not only a member, I gave it to a couple. I gave it to my brother and my brother-in-law for
Christmas. Well, you just made Kristen a lot of money.
Well, not a lot, $8 a month.
But that's a pretty good business,
they have
17%
of the market.
That's insane.
I got into them because the Inno boys who are here on Monday came and talked a little bit about how big they were.
Well, you have a very nice shave.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Used the shave butter today as well.
Did you?
No, not really. I didn't, no. Suzanne Muchen is here, the co-host of The Big Payoff. You can listen to that at WGNplus.com.
There is really no WGN Plus anymore.
At WGNradio.com.
There you go.
And anywhere else we can find you?
Yeah,
where
iTunes.
Are you going to have coffee today?
Where are we? I'm with my daughter and her friends today.
Nice, yeah.
We're going to go over to the Gauge.
Oh, good for you. Tell Billy I said hello.
Really?
Yeah, well, he won't know. It's okay. The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch. You know, we talk a lot about social media when it comes to personal use and certainly business use as well. Todd Grossman is the CEO of TalkWalker, and they have put together sort of a paper as to what we might see next year when it comes to social media. Todd, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Steve, good afternoon and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Tell me first about TalkWalker. Who are you guys?
We're a social data analytics company, and what we're doing is we're monitoring over 150 million websites, and we're doing listening, analytics, and reporting for companies. So they use us, our platform, to be able to make insights on their brand, reputation, and hearing what people are saying about them.
So you're a little behind the curtain. You're the people that businesses go to try to figure out how to come up with good social media campaigns.
That's one area, absolutely. And we're also looking around the corner and looking at trends in a very big way.
So I was looking at this top social media trends for 2017. And, you know, well, like anything else, really, the year before influences the year ahead. And that's really true here. And I want to get into the whole fake news thing and all of that and the wide-ranging impact that will have. But just start with me with the trend number one. You talk about the fact that the social media powerhouses in existence now, like the Facebook and whatever, are only going to get stronger and have a stronger sort of stranglehold. The idea of this wide open and free media or free internet is going to continue to shrink a bit in the coming year. Explain that for me.
Yeah, so what we're seeing is that Facebook, for example, one of the big power of social media giants, is discouraging the use of links to other websites. So this will continue to give marketers a bit of a headache, and we'll have to get a way to convert social media users to customers without taking them back to their own website. So Facebook, for example, wants to have more of a stake in having the content reside on their website.
So Facebook, right. So if you're selling, like I do travel. So if I want to bring someone from my Facebook page to my travel website, it's going to be harder for me to do that. That Facebook obviously wants you to stay on Facebook, not to go away.
Absolutely.
And so, and then there's this idea, and I just, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but, you know, there's the whole fake news thing, and it just seems to me that Facebook and the other giants are going to say, we need to be tougher on content to fight back on fake news. And in doing that, which is good, they're going to end up in some ways putting a stranglehold on everything else and in sort of hiding under the fighting fake news banner to do it.
Yes, so it is definitely a problem. In 2016, for the election, there was a lot of fake news out there. One of the biggest bits of fake news was the Pope endorsing Donald Trump that got millions and millions of eyeballs to it, and that was absolutely false. In terms of what Facebook is doing, they're putting in measures to see from an automated standpoint to get rid of that fake news, and it's something that people are going to be fighting back on. My advice is read as much as you possibly can and form your own opinions.
Am I wrong, though, in saying, because I want them to do all they can to get rid of fake news, but am I wrong in what I read from you guys is that in doing that, they're going to further tighten and be sort of the message controllers when it comes to what we see and read?
It's possible. We just don't know how much control they're going to have because every citizen out there, in essence, can be a journalist now these days. So
right.
That's an awful lot of tightening and editorializing in terms of what they would have to do.
And it's frightening, too, because anyone can say they're a journalist, but they might not hold themselves to any standard whatsoever, which is how we get in this trouble in the first place, I guess.
Correct.
You know, last year when we were having these conversations, we were talking about, oh, it's all about virtual reality and AR. That's what everyone's going to be talking about. This year, it seems like everyone's saying it's the messaging services, the social messaging, whether it's WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger, that's going to be where things really pop when it comes in 2017.
Yeah, we see that as a trend here. WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, WeChat, and Viber actually have a wider community than the four main social networks, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. And with social networks coming under some fire, we see a variety of reasons for brands to start exploring different opportunities within these closed communities.
Okay, so how do they do that, Todd? Because when I think of that, I think of my Messenger being a direct communication, say, between me and you, not allowing for a brand to get in there, get its message in. How do they use these messaging systems to sell their brand?
Well, you can have your, for example, with Skype, for example, you can have your messaging to be open to the public. So you're inviting anyone to be able to send you a message. So there will continue to be privacy with regards to what someone can communicate to you if they're part of your network or not, which leads into the other trend, which is there's going to be more targeting and more integration.
Right, right. This idea of throwing out the wide net is going to go away altogether.
Yeah, there are companies now that are doing things in on Twitter, for example, and sending personalized videos to fans for teams. So you'll have an automotive manufacturer wanting to sponsor the UK national soccer team, and the people that are part of the group supporting the UK national soccer team are those fans, and an automotive manufacturer could have access to directly hit all those fans.
Todd Walker is the CEO, Todd Grossman, I should say, CEO of TalkWalker. Thanks very much for joining us today. I hope we can do it again.
My pleasure. Have a good day.
You bet. You too. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.